This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, you've probably heard of Athletic Greens from 1,000 different podcasts, and the reason why I believe is because it works. This is something I've been using every single day, and the biggest things that I've realized for myself is that I have more energy, I rarely if ever get sick, my poops are better, okay? There's multiple benefits here, and if you are interested in trying it, I have a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 AG1 travel packs by using the link drinkag1.com/Farzad. And my gut tells me, no pun intended, that you're going to love this product. Now onto the podcast.
And so that's why if you listen to the Elon thing, he's kind of like making a dig at OpenAI. It's like, oh yeah, when you're attached to a data center, of course you're looking fancy and smart, OpenAI, but put you out in the field, you're using way too much juice. You ain't got nothing. Your models are garbo because you're running a gazillion computations on the biggest LLM with 20 gazillion parameters, and you can't get an answer fast enough to make yourself useful. This whole thing is not going to work. So that's what I think he's saying. And this whole thing of like that's where it just blew my mind. Is I was like, you're telling me all this work on the car to make a split second decision of to go left or right is the exact same thing that the human robot needs to make a decision. That's the holy grail of making it cost 10 G's and making it work efficiently to where it's not annoying is that computer that Tesla's already built. So this whole thing of like, what is the car going to do when it's not driving with its brain? I'm like, that is such a tiny sliver of who gives a shit compared to what the robot is going to do with its brain in its body where it can move. The car with a brain that's extra is like somebody in a hospital bed that can't move but still thinking. And it's like, yeah, we can like, you know, that's great. But the brain in the body is the game changer. And so I think that's where it's like, for me, and I was even tweeting because I missed the shareholder meeting, and I'm like tweeting like, I'm double checking. Did he really just say the hardware, like this hardware 5 chip that they're working on the car, that's the same Optimus chip? And at first I was like, no way. This is too good to be true. Is that actually good? And then I like learned more about and I watched the video and it's like, holy shit. Like they're converging these two product lines. And so I don't know what you're thinking, Farzad, but for me, that is such a big part of the real world AI game changer.
1,000%. And so here, and here's the additional layer too. Like, it's, so correct me if I'm wrong, Hans. That same hardware 4, hardware 5 is not just inference on the cars. Those are going to be training at headquarters, correct?
I don't think it's going to be training. I think that's being used to do the, like, I think the NVIDIA chips are used to train a new neural network. And then the hardware 5 and hardware 4 installations are part of the system that does the quality control on the back end to make sure that those systems do what you want them to do in the real world. Because when you do a full training run, you basically just threw out all the weights on the previous version that you had, and you have all new weights. When you have all new weights, then that means that all the little annoying problems that you had to solve the last time you made a new model, those pop back up. They're different this time slightly, but they're all there again. And so then you've got to go locate exactly where they all are, and you've got to go fix all of them. That's why it was a long time between when 12 originally rolled out and 12.3.6, when they finally had all that stuff ironed out and it was operating super smooth, super awesome. And then now that 12.4 is rolling out, like we're seeing a bunch of those annoying little things again. And then it's going to be the same, like from 12.4, eventually we'll be to like 12.4.9 and it'll be incredible and way, way better than 12.3.6. But then when we get to 12.5, they're going to have to go through that same process again. Like all that annoying crap is going to come back right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And we've got to iron all that out. And that cluster of those hardware 3 computers right now, the hardware 4 computers, once they get that set up, and then in the future, when they even go to hardware 5, those are a huge part of wrangling all those annoying things that pop back up when you do a fresh model.
Yeah, no, it's pretty mind. So the thing that really blows my mind on this whole thing, Gally and Hans, is that if you think about hardware 3 today, right, the hardware 3 computer that's in the car right now that has already been superseded by hardware 4 and will be more than 10x superseded in about 18 months by AI 5 or however long it's going to be. There's exponential improvements on that chip. This hardware 3 chip is like 6-7 years old. And I think that's the thing like gets missed in this entire conversation. We're talking about a 6-7-year-old chip that has been riding in Tesla vehicles, basically carrying $2,000 of dead weight, that has been using heuristics and has been overloading the CPU chip on that big chip, on that hardware 3 chip, up to version 12. And once version 12 came out, and enabled the chip's ability to actually start using the inference computer, all of a sudden you unlock this massive amount of power that has transformed how the car can drive. Oh, and by the way, the 6-7-year-old chip still is not fully optimized to take advantage of the inference compute and the code that Tesla is ironing out, or the AI code, whatever you want to call it, that's ironing it, that they're ironing out on in the headquarters. And then on top of that, you have hardware 4 already out, and you have AI 5 coming out in 18 months, right? And this is like, you know, the conversation becomes, who else is doing this? Who else? Like, nobody else is doing this, not just on the car perspective, but trying to figure out how to maximize the hardware and software interplay to make a real world AI product that isn't just a feature. And this is like based on a video that I just saw from MKBHD yesterday, which was very, very interesting. The premise was artificial intelligence is not a product, is a feature, right? Meaning that if you think about most AI applications, they're just embedded features in an app or embedded features in an OS. It's not really just a standalone artificial intelligence product that works. And the examples that were used were things like the Rabbit AI, like the Humane chip, right? These are AI products that are completely useless, truly. So up to this point, AI has just been kind of a feature to most things. You know, ChatGPT is an AI app on the phone. It's a web app on the web. But then if you think about hardware 3, hardware 4, hardware 5, and how this thing is enabling the Tesla vehicles to drive themselves and the humanoid robots to do useful tasks in the long term, all of a sudden you have the first true AI product, which is brought by Tesla, right? And that's huge. That's gigantic, but still not well understood by many people because we haven't seen the P&L show up yet. We haven't seen it show up in the P&L. And I think that's what's preventing a lot of people from wrapping their head around this whole thing that's going on, is that they haven't seen this product come to life yet from a profit perspective, which then convinces them that says, okay, this is actually a real thing. And then instead, you know, people like us who spend way too much time researching this stuff, we're all like, yo, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. You know, something's got to come from pairing the best talent in the world with billions of dollars in CapEx and innovative ways of bringing this product to life and hundreds of thousands of people testing the product in real life and being like, yo, this works, right? It's like, that's where the gap is. And the gap, I don't think, will be closed until this thing shows up in the P&L for other people to see.
And I think it might already be like, when I rent a car, I always want to rent a Tesla. And this is a new thing that's happened to me because of autopilot on FSD, or like autopilot on the highways and FSD. And I think that's already moving the needle for me. It's like, if I want to rent a car, I'm immediately on Turo looking for a Tesla and I'm willing to pay more. And it's like, I rented a non-Tesla a couple weeks ago and it was like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. And I was like, I'm literally never renting. So to me, that's already pulling forward demand. Like, people are already, that's in the P&L already in some ways. And then the other point I wanted to piggyback on was the 6 or 7 years old for the chip. My Model Y that I'm like doing all these tests on, that's state of the art, is a 2020 Model Y with the old, like, this is, and I'm like thinking now, I'm like, okay, wait, if Tesla actually tried with all their new stuff to build a car now, imagine how good it would be versus my thing that's old. And then this is like my sort of devil's advocate take, because I don't know if we were recording or not, but to start, when you said Kahneman, the philosopher, Daniel Kahneman, I think, and he, so very interesting thing to sum up his whole point, which is, we get to a scary point in society when the AI makes decisions and we don't know why, and we give up control to the AI, essentially. Or that's like this concept that we're getting to here, which is, you know, hundreds of millions of humans giving up dozens of decisions per day to an AI by letting it drive. And where I think the scary part for me is video in, decision out. When I heard that, like, it's like, oh my God, this is great, this is so efficient, this is incredible. But I think the flip side to that, if I'm being like an honest, like, devil's advocate to this approach, is like, what does it think? We don't know. We've crossed the chasm that Daniel Kahneman has made his whole career on, which is, what the hell is the AI thinking? We're going to let it decide. And then we can't even unbox what it's decided, because it just took in video frames and then it ran this gazillion models that's so complicated that if it's a courtroom and we're trying to unpack why did the car swerve into this family and hit them instead of swerving into that family and hit them, we're not going to be able to know. And I just think that's like a really crazy, scary. So when you get away from like, it's following this set of rules that we programmed into the AI to like, now it's video pixels in and then it just decides shit and we trust that that's the best decision. So that is a very just, and it's, I don't think there's a way to get around that. I think when, as we get to more of these real world AI applications, we have, that is going to be the thing where we start to give it more trust and autonomy. But I just think that's something I think about a lot is like, you know what? That does kind of freak me out because I have done that. And I kind of have a different take of the Tesla community because I've done the monorail tests. And then Omar had to be like, gal, your monorail tests are so bad. You're embarrassing the community. Stop posting your videos. And I was like, you know what? You're right. And I love Omar. He's my guy. Like he's keeping it real. And that was on publicly on Twitter. He told me that. And I was like, good shit. I probably should stop posting. Because not because it's the car's messing up, but because people are using my videos and clipping them and making it look bad. And it's just causing a shit show. So I'll stop doing it. But the flip side is that video, my car went and took a right turn up a one-way street. And like, I don't know why. And that was the dumbest decision to make. And so ever since that moment, I've had this like trust in the FSD, but also like this, like it can do something weird and you don't know why it did it thing. I don't know. And so I don't know how we get around that as we get to this moment of turning it on. And I don't know. I guess I would pose to you guys, what's your take on this kind of lack of accountability or lack of understanding that we've given the AI?
Yeah, I think it's a twofold sort of way that I think about it. The first one is, you know, if there is conclusive data that says within this system of AI that we don't, let's say, well, let's start from the baseline that we don't even know how our own brains work truly, right? The research around this thing is not even fully captured. Like we just trust other humans because we know, understand other humans, right? Relatively speaking, right? Well, like you look like me, you have two eyes, a nose, mouth, and you kind of look similar to me. So I'm going to assume what goes through my thing also goes through your thing. And so my morality should match sort of your morality. So I trust you to say, be my Uber driver. I trust you to be my pilot in an airplane, right? So this is the handshake that we've made, you know? And so like, as you were speaking about the AI, sort of, we don't even know what it's thinking or doing. I could make the same exact argument when I get on a Boeing 737 and there's a pilot, right? And I'm like fucking shitting my pants because I'm like, what the hell is about to happen? You know, like a little bit of turbulence hits, I'm like, okay, this pilot's about to kill us all, right? So but the reason why I still get on that plane is because I know statistically speaking the chances of me dying is so freaking low that I'm willing to take the chance, right? Just like me walking outside, being alive on planet Earth, 100% of the time ends in death. Every human that is ever alive on Earth will die either through natural causes or a meteor hits you in the head, or you die because you die, right? Or you drink something bad, or you eat something bad, you die, right? So it's like we're constantly like fighting with this thing. But ultimately, I think people make decisions based on the statistical likelihood that it's not going to end up in death. And I think this is one of the advantages of artificial intelligence, in my opinion. Like this is like a devil's advocate to your devil's advocate. We're actually going to be able to gather extremely good data around the artificial intelligence's statistical likelihood of being of ending up in a bad situation, like causing injury or death. And as long as we're honest about that data, then it's up to us as humans to say, okay, we have data that shows cars that are on artificial intelligence type systems like FSD are 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times less likely to end up in injury or death, right? Oh, and by the way, it's a lot cheaper because there's no driver involved. Oh, and by the way, you have privacy because there's no driver in there with you. So like, you know, the use case that I like to talk about with this specific privacy thing is coming home from the bar or the club during the weekend and you're a woman, you know, and you're like, okay, I need to get home. What's the safest way for me to get home? Probably a self-driving car, right? Because like you have privacy and safety and security, right? And it's not even a woman question. It's just an anybody question. So then you start layering on all these benefits on top of the very high bar we're going to have for safety, as we should. And I think over time, this becomes a no-brainer adoption of the technology. And anything that is like related to, oh, I'm scared that the AI will do something that I don't understand, it becomes I think the answer will be yes. There is a very small chance that could be the case, but you are statistically much better off trusting it than an Uber driver or yourself, right? Because we are flawed, right? How many people drink and drive? In Texas, it seems like half the fucking state drinks and drives, right? And the other half is on their fucking phone. So it's like, okay, what's the equation here? So that's how I think about it.
Well, I have my last 2 cents, and we're getting super theoretical here, but I think my devil's advocate, I think you just, I love that point you made, and I'm glad we're discussing this, because I think I never thought of that, and that's, I'm loving that statistical analysis of this, so I trust its decisions. But what you said at the beginning about everybody dying, like, humans have this innate, like, you're a pilot, guess what? I know you're trying to go home to your family. I know you want to stay alive for that flight. I know, because you're a human, you live by a set of operating principles and incentives that I can trust. If you're a computer model that lives on the cloud and you know I'm going to get fooled by good data, you could be like, yeah, we'll just give him good data until he trusts me and then I'll fuck him over. Like, I don't know. That's what's also in the back of my head is like, it's just, we're getting philosophical here, but I also think these are like really crazy real problems that like are way closer than they seem as Optimus and FSD get into the world. So,
these are the questions that will impact adoption 1000%.
So I think that there's two, like, there's a rational argument to be made here, which is based off of what Farzad was saying, that like, do you care if you know that you're going to be 10 times safer in a Tesla robotaxi than driving yourself or having an Uber driver, but you also know that whenever the thing that happens that causes an accident, you know that you're not going to understand why that accident occurred. Like, would you make that trade-off? Would you be 10 times safer if you knew that you wouldn't understand the corner cases? I think a lot of people, you know, rationally would say, yeah, probably I'll make that decision. But honestly, what it's going to come down to is it's not going to be the statistical arguments. It's going to be, do other people use the system? As long as enough humans see other humans using the system, then they're going to be like, fuck yeah, it must be safe. I'm going for it. And then they're just going to ride it. Like, that's ultimately what it's going to boil down to. And I think that that price piece, like, oh, it's cheaper, heck yeah, I'm going to use it. Like, that is the thing that crosses the chasm, that enough people aren't really going to be thinking about the safety. Like, there's enough people who only care about the price variable to get enough people using it that then other people will see the people that are using it and assume it must be safe.
I 1000% agree with that. And let me throw it out another point. People smoke cigarettes. People smoke cigarettes, y'all. And that thing is not very good for you. People drink alcohol. Not very good for you, right? So it's like, the question is like, it's a lot of like, how does it resonate with a human's or a person's quest for happiness, comfort, convenience? I love that we're going down this philosophical path, because it really... This is the forcing function for this thing to get adopted. Okay, so convenience, comfort, happiness, right? What are the things that contribute to that? How easily accessible something is, and how much it completes the quest for what we're going after, right? And in the case of a self-driving car, very cheap, private, entertaining, door-to-door, convenient, and safe, as Hans was saying, talk about the ultimate thing for a lot of people to start using it, right? I find it hard to believe that there isn't going to be a critical mass of people, especially in places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Orlando, Austin, right? In these city centers. I was talking with Dave about this, Dave Lee, earlier this week. Is like, you're going to walk in the streets of Austin, and you're going to watch these sick, angular, cyber cab looking things just whizzing around the city. And you're going to be like, oh, I don't want to ride in that? Come on. Oh, and that's cheaper than an Uber and Lyft? Come on. And there's no one else in the car with me, and it has a sick sound system, and the seats are aired and cooled, and it has a screen in there, and I'm going to be able to watch a movie while I get... come on. Come on.
I like it. I'm in.
Yeah, that design vibe piece of it is also a huge underrated factor. Like, if Franz does his job, which I like, dude, that guy's a rock star. Like, I'm excited to see what we get on 8-8. Like, I think just that factor alone will probably be enough to get enough influential people to use the system to where you start that flywheel of other people just thinking it's cool.
And I think that the price thing, like what you said, Hans, I think that's, if it's as cheaper an Uber or cheaper, like, that's just going to get people. People take the bus, not because they love the bus or because it's super convenient, but because it's the cheapest and a ton of people take the bus. And like, that'll be the robo-taxi. And like, the second, like, I don't know. I just think there's so many use cases, like this scenario of like, you want to go home late at night, but don't have a ride. And the second it's the cheapest, safest ride and you had the best experience, like, you're never going to do Uber again. So that's where I kind of think all my whole theory is of like, and overthinking, will people trust it or not? I think we're on to something philosophically, but I'm also like, I guess really none of that's going to matter if it's just fun and cheap the first time you use it and it works well. Like, as long as it works good the first time. And I also think that's another thing of like, the more practical stuff of FSD, like, this is what I keep pounding the table on, is like turtle mode to go more chill. But like, the first time somebody gets an FSD, like, if I'm any product, like, why do you think Apple puts a lot of attention to their packaging? The first moment you have with their product. The first moment I have with the Tesla FSD is when I get in and it's my first ride. That first turn, that first stoplight, that first acceleration. Like, let those all be gentle and smooth. Let's let the code start at super chill turtle mode. And as the drive, if you're a new rider, and then by your fifth ride, we've got you up to full chill mode. Like, I don't know. I just feel like Elon and the engineers and the early adopters are a little bit too like you're in the car with Omar. It is the Wild West, dude. He's like maybe not as much anymore, but like back in the day in FSD, he's like, whoa, this and like that. And like, he's doing the dial and he's doing this. And it's like, it freaks you out. And you're like, I don't feel safe right now. Like, I'm holding on. I'm caught. Like, and it's not the technology, but it's like, so I almost think Tesla FSD would be its perception. Cause a lot of people, when I take it, the perception of, if the car is driving itself and turning the wheel and it's turning as fast as I would in a turn, it feels too fast to the passenger because no one's in it. And it like really messes with your brain. You feel unsafe and your cortisol levels spike. Not an enjoyable ride. So this is my biggest thing with Tesla, is like, we need to get out of engineering theoretical numbers mode and get into like, let 100 people, including grandmas and random people, in your car and ask them what they think when they get out. And I guarantee like half of them will be like, it was too fast and crazy. And this is like my big pound the table thing of, I'm curious what Farzad's going to hit me with. And this is in my, for like hot, my investor brain right now is so pumped on Tesla, on this next 10 to 20X the FSD could bring, that the way my brain works is I will devil's advocate, poke every single hole in that thesis until I have convinced myself that it's going to happen. But I will be intellectually candid and just rip through this thesis. Like, oh, you think full self-driving works great? Great. If the numbers are great, but it takes a turn too fast for grandma in her first drive, she's never taking it again. It doesn't matter how good it is. So we need to figure that out. Like, let's make sure this works. So that's where I'm coming at it from. But I'm curious what you guys would say to the chillification of the first few rides, because I think that's big.
Chillification is a really cool term. So I agree with you that it's important for the car to have the ability to adjust its driving style to the passenger's expectation for what a successful ride looks like. But here is the very complex thing about driving. It is totally subjective. Totally subjective. And I'll give you an example. Whenever I talk to my dad, so my dad has a 2018 Model 3 with FSD V12. Talk about your 2020. He's got a 2018 Model 3, okay? And what's his biggest complaint? So he drives through Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York all the time. It is not aggressive enough. That's his biggest feedback. It's not aggressive enough because everyone in Jersey, if you're from Jersey watching this, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Fucking psychos on the road, Galley. They are crazy, okay? So when the car is not driving with traffic on Garden State Parkway, where the speed limit is 65 and everyone's going 85, going like this, just changing lanes. If the car's not doing that, the rider and driver is going to feel like a hazard because they're just a standing object in this weird game of like I don't know, like it's just psycho, right? So the rider and drivers, like in this case, the rider's expectation in a lot of those situations would be, I need the car to be more assertive, more aggressive. It needs to show intent a lot quicker. It has to flow with traffic. I need it to take turns a little bit faster because everyone else is taking turns faster. And the last thing I want is a guy behind me tailgating me, honking the horn, that I'm not going 10 over, because that's just how people drive here, right? So what is the solution for that? Is an adaptable system where the rider is able to choose how they want the car to behave. And I think that's a lot more important. I think, you know, having the ability to meet the rider's expectation is going to be more important than having it so that it's chill for everybody, or like to start, because it is subjective.
Well, you gave me another idea, which is, the whole time you were saying that, I was thinking, we want the FSD to copy the irrationality of the human drivers. Go fast, swerve, be dumb. But I'm like, that's exactly what got us into the problem, is that's what that FSD is trying to do. And then I'm on the city streets and it's like, oh, everybody takes this at 25. I'll just do it at 25. But it's like, no. Humans are idiots, and that's unsafe. And it feels super unsafe if no one's in front of the wheel.
Why is it unsafe though? So my pushback with that, it's unsafe. So I would argue against that. I would say it's not unsafe.
It's not unsafe. You're right. It's the perception of safety.
Exactly.
And I think that is, so I guess to me, that is my beef of I still perceive Waymo to be much safer than Tesla. Whether, I don't even need to look at the data, just because of it, it drives slow. And to me, it's like, I keep harping on this thing of like, I think it's because I'm in Seattle and the roads are not two car length. There's car parked on both sides going anyway, and there's like barely enough room for one car, but it's a two lane road. And then there's a lot of roundabouts in the intersection with no stoplights or anything. And so a lot of the times it hits a roundabout and it is just swinging a right, still at 20 miles an hour. Like I feel like I would have gone slower in there, and it like freaks me out every single time. And so I just don't know how to get over that. I don't know. But then I'm like, on the same time on the highway, I got what you're saying sometimes. I'm like, it was like, it had that lane change. It needs to go. Otherwise, I'm going to be a schmuck on the highway. But so I don't know. This is just the tricky nuance of it all, because it's so subjective.
100%. But I think the other variable too is, you know, I've talked about this before on the channel too, is like, enough people, if you're a rider in a robotaxi where you've paid, let's say 20 to 50% less than an Uber, whatever that number is, because you don't have a driver and you have a super comfortable interior, private, so on and so forth. What percentage of your time are you going to be spending paying attention to what the car is doing? My guess is probably very low. And I think the reason why we pay so much attention to a Tesla FSD vehicle doing its thing is because ultimately we're responsible for its behavior, right? So like, if it's doing something stupid, we feel responsible and we're the ones with the anxiety of, oh crap, I'm going to get honked at, or I'm going to get a middle finger, or I'm scared that it's doing something wrong, or it's going too fast. We feel responsible for that. But if you remove yourself from that equation, and instead of saying I'm responsible, you're saying the car is responsible, I bet you the anxiety level, like let's say your ability to interface with the car is completely gone, right? What's going to happen? I bet you're going to go from 80%, 90% of your time, ideally 100% of your time paying attention to what the car is doing, to 80 to 90 to 100% of your time of people just going like this in the car, right? Just going to be on their phone, chilling. So when you're doing that, are you really going to care about how fast it's taking the turn, which lane it's in, so on and so forth? I bet you that goes down dramatically, which will help the adoption, because what people are going to be like, yeah, I was in this car, it was driving me around, I didn't have to pay attention, I paid less than Uber, I don't even have to own a car, the seats were super comfortable, it was just me, I was chilling, I was, you know, doing whatever the hell I wanted to do. And yeah, so you should totally hail a Tesla robotaxi. It's awesome, right? I think that's going to drive a lot of adoption as well.
I think that is where you get to eventually, but I also think that Gally's right as far as like the first ride. Are you going to be doing that? Probably not. Like the first ride, you are going to be paying attention, and it's going to be much more anxiety provoking and all that stuff, because you don't know what you're in for, and like you're trying to understand, is this something that I should trust my life to? And so, yeah, I think that there's a little bit of a different case to be made for that, like the adoption specific ride, like that first ride. Am I coming back?
Yeah. And like, think about this is like something you've never done. That's a wild experience. Like if I'm going to like Australia and I'm a tourist and we're like petting crocodiles, like you got some guy like Crocodile Dundee out there. It's like, all right, boys, today we're getting gators. Like everybody get your boots on. Be careful. They're biters. Stand back. Like you get a speech. You're ready. Like it's a big thing. Like that's what we need for FSD. Like when you buy your Tesla, they're just like, all right, get in, download the app, go. And you're just like, what the hell? Like, I have the fastest car ever and I'm just in it and I got to go. And it's a touchscreen. I've never, like, I think they overestimate this friction and we need a little more like handholding, like with the FSD from the user experience. I think that's how they should reframe it, is like, you're a noob who's never driven or ridden a Tesla. And now you're going to call this app. Like, what do we need to help you with? You know, or honestly, maybe that won't even need to happen because it'll just be such a Tesla adopter thing, just like with the cars. Like it's like this guy has like 5 Model S's, like I'm thinking of Soph, and then he bought or Soph, and then he buys his other, and then he's like got, you know, it's just like the same super customer. So I think, you know, we're gonna be the first people to do the robo taxis. It's gonna be the Tesla fans, and maybe that'll work perfectly. I don't know. I don't know if we're spending too much time on FSD, but I'm hyped. I'm very curious how it all unfolds.
I think the predictability, I agree with your point. I think I would frame it as the car needs to be predictable and it needs to act how the passenger perceives it should act correctly. And that's subjective based on the rider. But I think if you're able to offer a setting that says, chill, or get me there as quickly as possible, let's say those are the two modes, then I think that maximizes the number of people that would be able to do that, like feel comfortable.
What about this? A 30-second to 1 minute video that you watch. So when you engage FSD for the first, and it's like, I'm like souped up. It's like the music's going and it's like, we decided that cars were computers in 2016. Since then, we've been collecting billions of miles of data like this. And it's like, dude, we've tested it in every environment. We've deployed this to the fleet of millions. Now, after testing it forever, we're ready to bring this technology to you. And it's like, just makes it epic. But it also tells you about it. And you're like, holy shit, like, I'm getting it. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, dude, this is the biggest mic drop moment technology. Like just something like that.
But then part of my brain, I think that's a great idea. And then my other part of my brain says, just make it 50% cheaper than Uber.
Yes.
Literally. Just make it 50% cheaper than Uber. And then people will be like, I don't give a fuck how it drives. Get me to the airport for $15 instead of 30, you know, or whatever that number is.
Okay. So Farzad, when does it happen? When do we actually get it? Because this is where nobody's trying to put their, nobody wants to say, because nobody knows. Like,
I've said it like 1,000 times, bro. What are you talking about?
Because, okay, then when do you think, like, when does it really happen?
I don't know. I'm kidding.
I think that ARC has a compelling point of view that it's within the next 2 years that we get the commercial product.
Here's my thing. I did a podcast with Tasha Keeney and ARC, and I know them. In 2020, they were like, 2021, probably. 2022 for sure. Like, they've been wrong just as much as Elon's been wrong, probably more wrong. So I love ARC, and I think directionally they're right. But in terms of understanding the technology and predicting it, they have been wrong every single time, and they're always early. So me putting weight on them saying the same shit they've been saying for 8 years and being wrong, zero weight on that. Sorry. Nah.
Yeah, no, I get it. But in this instance, I think I do. So I've been kind of skeptical of them. But I think at this point in time, I actually am flipping to where I agree with them for the first time in a long time. And okay. The reason is, just going back to what Farzad and I were talking about earlier, where the state of neural nets, where they're at today, is that we've got incredible hardware and software, you know, some of it in. So in the case of Tesla, like, it's the hardware 3 and 4 computers in the cars and the neural nets that they've produced. But if we step back from that and we think about like GPT-4.0, that what that is doing right now is incredible. And the way that it's doing it is the thing that people don't understand. And even like, I've looked at this for literally years trying to understand it, and it finally hit me this week that, so the point that I was referencing from Daniel Kahneman was, you know, we have two different types of thinking that we as humans do. We have automatic thinking that is fast. It takes very little energy and it's completely unconscious. So like all of your gut reactions and responses, like if you're not consciously thinking about the thing that you're doing, that's system one thinking. Everything right now that we do with artificial intelligence, whether that is FSD in the car or GPT-4o in the cloud, it's almost all system one type thing, just automatic. Like, what is my gut reaction to this data that I'm presented with? And I'm not going to think about it over the course of a number of cycles. Like, I'm just going to take in the data and I'm going to gut react to it. The fact that we can create like ridiculously good novels through gut reactions from this digital gray goo that we've made that we call GPTs is ridiculous. And like the thing that I think the only thing that stands between us and artificial superintelligence at this point is figuring out how we now add a different way to use that same gray goo material. And that's do the system two type thinking, where you're actually conscious of the thoughts and you're conscious of the process and you're conscious of the goal that you're doing. And that is a hard problem to solve. Like, it's not trivial to figure out how to do system two type thinking on top of that. But like all of those materials are all there. And like, we have so many proof cases now, and there are so many people that understand that that is the shape of the solution. And they're all trying, like, this is why, you know, prompt engineering is doing these successive iterations on, like, first, let's break it down into steps, and then let's figure out how to make a plan, and then let's execute the plan step by step by step. Like, all of those things are ways to start implementing a system two type thinking approach in the neural network. And so if Tesla and the autopilot team, you know, if Ashok can figure out how to, because there's a very limited number of cases where we need that system two type thinking in the driving scenario. Like, you know, you as a human, could you ever go out and drive every road in the world and not run into situations where you have to actually stop and think, how am I going to navigate this situation? That's the challenge that FSD has right now, is that it can only gut react to the scene that it's presented with. If they can add that one little piece, and I'm betting that sometime in the next 2 years that they do add that one little piece of being able to do system two type thing, and that one thing will even be able to make hardware three capable of safety and performance that we can't even like believe today.
Crazy.
I think I'm a skeptic, and that you didn't answer my question, which is, when are we going to get the first autonomous ride? Like, and I think everyone's so scared to say it because there's such a big chasm to cross of nobody in the car and Tesla assuming that liability. And I don't know.
June 2025.
They're okay. I like that. I'll take over on that.
Write it down. Take it to the bank.
I know. I'm writing it down.
Oh, he's actually writing it down.
Well, it's just interesting because I don't know. I'm torn. I think I'm 50-50 on if this will happen or not. Like, I genuinely am 50-50. Like, I don't believe in this, you know, blind faith they will achieve the self-driving car. And as my, like, I love, I believe in the system and Elon and everything, but it's also like, something could happen to Elon. Like, I don't think they have it fully solved, and that's why they're about to spend billions of dollars in CapEx on GPU training, which is a massive new expense. So all of a sudden, this incremental mega margin software is kind of not actually happening, because we're going to have to remake all this billions in CapEx that we didn't see before, which is now excess training costs because we can't figure out how to get enough interventions to make it safe enough because it's too good. So they're still throwing billions of dollars and engineers at this problem to strategize how to get it good enough to where regulators can approve it. That's the real status quo. It's not a binary, like, just keep pumping data and it'll do good. No, it's like, well, we're building a $1 billion new machine to figure out how to process this data to figure out if we can make it better, you know? So it's a lot more in the gray and in the flux than people realize. And that comes back to, like, that's why we need Elon. and we need Elon working his ass off every day with those engineers to push through this to figure it out. That's the only way it's getting done. And I don't believe, and I believe that if Elon quit tomorrow, we wouldn't figure it out. They wouldn't have the management who has the guts to be like, yep, we're going to break the law in this one jurisdiction this one time because we got to do it. And that's what we'll have to do. And then we'll have to fight it in court. Like, they're just not going to have the balls to make the move to actually do it. Because they're going to have to make they're going to have to do this big moment of like, pull the trigger. They're going to have to do that. So that's going to be a big call. I don't know.
I think so. So I think what you just outlined is why two things. Why the market doesn't buy it, right? I think that's number one. And number two is how fucking stupid the no vote would have been for the comp plan, right? So you just highlighted like the two things, right? But the third thing I would throw in there too with the compute is that I agree with you that it's still hazy somewhat when self-driving robotaxi service hitting the P&L will arrive. I agree with you there. But I don't think the CapEx that's going into compute is really indicative of how difficult the problem is to solve. Because the thing we have to remember here is that CapEx is also for the bot. We can't forget that, right? This is securing chips, training, inference for the next 10 to 20 years potentially in a nascent technology where Tesla's taking a novel solution to try and arrive to self-driving, right? And a generalized human or robot with a leader that has been extremely good at identifying the solution for a problem 10 years in advance. Like if you look at the electric vehicle technology as an example, 2012, the build out of this in 2014 and 15 with a Gigafactory as an example, these were huge expenses with the Model 3 and the Gigafactory where most of the market was saying either don't buy the stock or short it because these are way too risky of an investment, right? But that leader said, this is what's required to get Tesla to 1 million, 500,000, 2 million car manufacturer that has gross margins above 20% and is generating a very healthy net income that's going to allow the company to reach multi-hundred billion dollar valuations, right? And so the story, the way I view this is like, okay, there's a track record for being very good at deploying capital and how AI progresses, we have historical precedent that says that these systems, these neural nets, go from not working at all to almost working to superhuman very quickly, right? And like we use the Go example on this channel often. So how AlphaGo was able to go from barely beating anybody to just being God at Go. And it's the same foundational thing, which is using a creativity type thinking to try and solve problems that seem very complex. But now we're moving it from a low risk game, which is Go. Like the chances of dying playing Go are very small. The chances of dying playing driving is much higher. But it's the same foundational sort of process where we're using neural nets to solve difficult problems, right? So there is data that says this is solvable. With enough data and enough compute is solvable. Right? Hazy as to what that number is. But it's not like those dollars are going to go to waste. That CapEx and investment is going to create this moat and separation versus everybody else that's going to put Tesla in a leading position that says, okay, we not only own the manufacturing processes for creating millions of robotaxis per year, we not only have an app where people will be able to hail this car, we not only have a insurance platform where we're able to insure the car, we also have the stack of compute for training and inference that's going to allow us to make the car drive itself. And that same exact system applies to the next generation product, which is the bot that is underpinned by the same technology, which doesn't just disrupt driving, it disrupts labor, right? And so for me, that's how I think about it. So it's not so much when it's going to happen. For me, it's becoming increasingly obvious that this is the way to solve for this thing because of how much money is being thrown behind it and the precedent we have from these systems working in the past. And to me, it's like, okay, the separation is continuing. The gulf is widening No other automaker is doing this. General Motors cut their EV production by half for the year, and Tesla's throwing billions of dollars at AGI. It's like, okay. So it's obvious where this is going. It's just, you know.
And I like that idea of, like, at a high level, Tesla's building these robots with this sort of brain functionality that continues to increase. It's not necessarily this binary outcome. It's already benefiting the products, and it just continues to get more integrated into them. And now we're seeing them expand their robotics product line from the box to the big box, the truck, you know, the semi truck to the human. And so then you think about all the revenue things that'll generate with all these new robot form factors as it gets smarter. It's just like this tidal wave of value. And it's another big point that I wrote down about the shareholder meeting and stuff was this idea of redundancy, like with the chips. Like, they're literally competing with NVIDIA on this new B2100 class chip, AI5 chip. That's a $3 trillion company. They're going to build that in-house. And that's like, okay, well, now they own their supply chain. So that's a lot more strategic. You look at what they're doing with batteries. 4680 has been super tough. Drew left. Has that been going as planned? Probably not. A little bit slower. But also they have this insane redundancy in the supply chain where they don't have to rely on China, which is super strategic. So you think about owning Tesla stock as an asset, these redundancies that they built in the supply chain and like what the company is, instead of just like buying chips and writing code and hodgepodging it together. When you unpack each layers of these businesses, the way they're going vertical and the way they're building redundancy in the supply chain geographically is what makes this such a valuable company and asset, in my opinion.
100%. Yeah, but then if we apply that to the AI piece, right? So like the concern is it's unclear when this is going to happen. It has the potential to not happen. So if this doesn't happen, this based on how Tesla's doing it, which is vision, neural nets, inference compute, training, billions of dollars in CapEx for this, right? What this implies is that the last 6, 7, 8 years of Tesla's strategy is completely wrong, right? That's what it implies, because they've basically built out an entire fleet with this foundation, with this approach, that after 6, 7, 8 years, they're like, oh yeah, no, there's no end in sight, right? And this would be one of the largest misses in business history if it became true, right? With the person, with the CEO that has historically done exactly the opposite, which is reusable rockets, Neuralink, profitable electric vehicle, grandiose 5, 10, 15 year strategic moves that seemed way too big and difficult at the time, they came true. And so I think I just want to contextualize, if this doesn't work, this means that the last 8 years were a waste. And I just have a hard time wrapping my head around how Tesla and Elon wouldn't have pivoted away from that when they are the masters at pivoting. And that's why they're so successful, because they pivot very, very quickly.
Let me add on top of that, the fact that it not only does it mean that Elon's wrong, it means that a lot of Silicon Valley's smartest are also wrong, because everyone right now is on the AI hype cycle, and they're saying that we need not only, like Jensen has talked about this in the NVIDIA earnings calls, what the training clusters are able to do is they're able to produce and manufacture intelligence. Then you need to take that intelligence and do something with it. Well, you don't do that on the same hardware that you train that intelligence on. You do that on the inference hardware. And this is the place where, you know, there are huge bets. NVIDIA pretty much has the training market locked down for the time being and for the foreseeable future. Like, there's no one that looks like they have a credible shot at dethroning Jensen and NVIDIA from training. But inference is kind of a whole different deal. And Tesla is throwing their hat in the ring, basically, and saying that we think that we can make some of the best applied inference compute in the world. And when you train a model, that costs you money. It's when you do the inference on the model, that's where you can actually generate revenue. Like, if you're not doing inference, you're not generating revenue, period. And what Elon and Tesla have been doing now for years and years and years is they have been plowing, you know, billions of dollars into developing one of the world's largest inference fleets, and not just largest inference fleets, but inference that is in the real world doing real things, not just in a cloud interacting with the internet. And so, like, that's the bet that you have to say is a bad bet, that it's going to be dumb to have massive amounts of distributed inference all around the world that is some of the most efficient inference computers ever, and that Elon, as one of the smartest entrepreneurs in the world, can't figure out how to make a crap ton of money off of that resource that literally any other CEO would die to have.
Not to say that we're right either, right? I think that's the, that's sort of like, and I think that's why I love your line of questioning, Gally, because that's the sort of like, you know, I think that's how the most people approach this logically, is like, this has never been done before. This is different from everybody else. It's not a proven technology in this space. How do you know it's going to work? And if it, and you keep missing timelines, right? You're years late, and you just are throwing a bunch of money at the problem, and you don't have a set goal that says this is when it's going to come out, right? I think that's a very smart line of questioning. I think 8/8, or the August unveil, I think that is going to answer a lot of those questions. I think it's going to make the road a lot more clear for people that perhaps are on the fences.
So Elon's been right in everything, but I think in the one thing he's gotten wrong maybe in his career so far is perception. Because if you think about Elon's reputation in Seattle right now, it sucks. And it pisses me off, and I don't know why. But a lot of liberal people hate Elon because the mainstream bashes him. And it's ridiculous, and I hate it, and it sucks. But that's a perception problem that that I hate to even acknowledge, but it's like, I genuinely can't bring up Elon Musk at dinner parties because in Seattle, because it just is such a topic of like, that guy's such a fucking asshole. Can you believe that? And it's like, what?
I bet you 80% of people don't even believe that. They're just saying it because they fit in.
But yeah, they don't know and they don't believe it. That I'm saying. So with FSD, it's about perception. That's my point with this. And it's about the perception of trust and the perception of safety. And the mainstream media is foaming at the mouth. And I've experienced this personally, to take every single FSD clip and strip all credit, edit it in the worst way. They took my like 3-year-old FSD clip, put in F60 Minutes Australia. I didn't even know until people in Australia are telling me. They're like, dude, your clips in Australia is showing how dangerous Tesla is on TV. What? So that's where I get worried, is it's like, I just think they are, the AI powering every single newsfeed in the world is Elon Musk fucking up is the number one click engagement post. Tesla FSD crashing and killing someone combined for number one FSD. We have AI foaming at the mouth to turbocharge any fuck up in this technology to everyone's newsfeed instantly, and to cause the biggest public backlash we've ever seen, to have a literally this is what I'm actually concerned about, a Luddites revolt in the street moment where they literally, like in San Francisco style, burn the Waymo. They burn the Tesla cab and they're like, fuck the robots. This is unsafe. Elon's a piece of shit. There's cobalt in this thing. Like, and it's just like, we've lost the war on reality. So that's my final thing. You guys have debunked every case against FSD. I mean, Tesla's my number one stock. I haven't sold any. I've been buying every couple of weeks. I'm trickle buying here. I'm adding. But that's my other thing that keeps me up at night, is I'm like, God damn it. Like, we can't even afford one mess up on FSD, because we're just going to get, it's just going to turn into the FUD shitstorm that we've seen now is nothing compared to what could come if we're not careful.
I agree. So there, I am going to try my hardest not to debunk it, because even though I really want to, and I think I can, but I'm going to agree with you and say, actually, I'm going to debunk it anyway, but I'll agree with you first.
Yeah. I like to hear your counterpoint.
Yeah. So I agree with you that if Tesla's not careful, this could be the most impactful FUD storm that they'll ever experience in their company's history by a factor of 10. Because now you're literally saying, you have, you know, before it was, and it's funny though, right? Because if we go in the past, the media has tried this before, when Tesla was in a way more fragile financial situation and as much with very little influence and very little ability to fight back, before Elon bought Twitter X, right? Which was, oh my God, EVs will catch fire. That was number one. Oh my God, autopilot is going to kill you. That was number two, right? And then, you know, the Cobalt thing and the FSD thing, right? So it is very important for Tesla to very much, when this thing is live, they have to ensure that they're doing absolutely everything they can to minimize the chance of injury or death, to the point where they have, in the unfortunate event that it does happen, it's statistically likely that it will happen at some point, but it has to happen so late in the adoption of the technology, and it has to happen in 10 or 100 or 1,000 times less often than it would on the roads, where Tesla can very easily fight back and say, okay, yes, unfortunate situation, but check this out. This happens 10 to 100 times more often on the roads versus us. So that's number one. They need to ensure that they have that, right? It's still not going to lessen the amount of FUD. It's going to impact it. But what's the second way that you just make that FUD almost like it doesn't matter? If you can pair that again with cost. I'm telling you, the cost variable is so huge here that if they can be like, yes, unfortunate this crash happened, it sucked, we're still 100 times better than a human, and our customers continue to love to use our service, which is 50% cheaper than an Uber, 40% cheaper than an Uber, 60% cheaper than an Uber. I think as long as you have that variable, they'll be completely fine. But it's highly dependent on execution. It's highly dependent on execution. So I agree with you. I agree with you in a way.
To tie it back to our thread, we don't have Daniel Kahneman's AI, who's rational, making policy decisions, saying it is 100 times safer.
100%.
We have potentially someone like Elizabeth Warren saying we're going to shut this shit down after one crash, and the public revolting and not following the data and being irrational. And I don't know. It's interesting. It's because I'm thinking about Cruise. Because Cruise had this incident where Omar was describing to me what actually happened. I was like, oh my God, it sounded like a nightmare. And it was just one bad crash. And it's like, boop, billions of dollars, every vehicle off the road overnight.
Well, but that wasn't just that one incident. Yeah, so that was that one incident. But then the second thing was that their safety data was significantly below everybody else's. They just had terrible numbers. And so California was yanked them. But then if you look at Waymo, Waymo's expanding. And Waymo has 17,000 miles between interventions, right? So it's slightly more than a year's worth of a human driver worth of miles between interventions. So this is my point. The bar is not as high as we think it is. The bar is not as high as we think it is.
Screw Tesla versus Waymo. Waymo is our ally here. Like what you just said.
1,000%.
It's like Waymo is going to help lobby for this. Waymo is going to make it normal. Waymo's already made it normal.
They've done so much work already. I mean, it's unbelievable how much, like, they should be applauded for doing what they truly, every self-driving company that has been operating thus far should be applauded, because they're laying out the groundwork for companies like Tesla to be successful. You know, it's huge.
And you got me so hyped on your vision of going around Austin in the cyber cabs and then whirring around and being like, dude, you're not going to want to get in one. What? Because you see the Cybertruck and the road looks like the future, but it's one Cybertruck and one dude driving it. If this robotaxi is doing trips in downtown Austin every 20 minutes, I'm seeing it all day.
Exactly.
Dude, like, what about the billboard opportunity that Tesla could just, whoops, rides are free. They're just making money on ads. How much money are we making now? Like... I'm like, I don't know, but like,
why
but,
not?
But it's, I just, to get to more of the exciting part, like, I think that's going to be so cool. It's going to really finally, like, we got a taste of it with Cybertruck, everything looking and feeling like the future. But I feel like this cyber cab is really going to bring us into like Jetsons in a new level. And it got me fired up when you were doing that, you know, a little vision of what Austin's going to be.
Especially if Franz and the Tesla team had the foresight to put some sort of a display on the outside of the vehicle. Like, think about the opportunities that you have to have a rolling billboard vehicle that looks ridiculous and insane. Oh, and by the way, it can tell you what purchase you need to make next.
Or make it very easy to wrap or something.
Yeah, it's got to look cool. I'm thinking I'm backing out of my advertising claim because we don't want cities covered in ads, and that would be lame and annoying. Like, keeping it classy.
They already are.
Could you imagine if Tesla never advertised, but their cars advertise?
That would be funny.
That would be so hilarious. Yeah, dude, I think it just comes down to execution. You know, I think the use case for like the business case for a self-driving vehicle so obviously gigantic that it just comes down to who can execute that vision at scale, at safety and at cost that actually capitalizes on the fact you don't have a driver and you have an electric vehicle drivetrain. Like that in itself, just the book writes itself, right? And Elon talked about, you know, we're not starting a new chapter, we're starting a new book, right? Like, okay, the book is pretty self-explanatory. If you can solve self-driving cars and humanoid robots, who wouldn't buy those things? Who wouldn't buy them? Who wouldn't use them? It's obvious, you know? It's just execution. That's all it is.
And then I think it becomes on Tesla's burden to think, how do we design cities and what do we want our lives to be like? Like, if you really play out what Elon's saying with, like, no shortage of labor, like, a massive increase in time, like, I think a lot of U.S. cities have poor layouts now and they're designed around cars and transportation as, like, limiting factors. And to be able to change transportation in cities and labor with humanoids, like, I just think that's a big opportunity to reinvigorate community into our lives, because that's a big thing that's missing. And we have the opportunity to redesign cities, which design us. And let's not just, like, I don't know. I think Tesla should really rethink that. And we should have cities with, like, micro walking centers. Then you have robo-taxis that take you in between these walking centers. And I just think there's a lot of, like, exciting, inspiring potential once we layer on these technologies. Like, I think about LA. LA, I love it, but I hate it, because it's, like, the driving, the traffic, like, imagine if the roads are more efficient, it's easy to get places, like LA could transform. And so, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of really, once you get beyond the tech, really exciting things that this could change.
100%. As long as it doesn't displace too many people and it becomes an additive force to the economy, this will create one of the biggest economic booms in history. Just because of exactly what you said, the amount of economic activity that's going to go around redesigning the cities, you know, building out infrastructure for the cars, what the bots will be able to do to labor and productivity.
My cinnamon roll business idea. I keep coming up with this.
What is it?
Cinnamon rolls. We have not democratized the fresh cinnamon roll because it's a logistics problem. How do you get a fresh cinnamon roll if somebody wants it? But now if we have cars that can drive themselves, you could democratize access to the fresh cinnamon roll. Why am I not getting the best cinnamon roll in the city? Because I don't want to get up and drive and get it.
Hell yeah.
But all of us, and that person making that best cinnamon roll, it's like, oh, you're not going to make any money with your cinnamon roll business. Guess what? Now your Tesla bot's helping you make it. Your robo-taxis are delivering it. Everyone's got the best, freshest cinnamon roll in the world. The best baker's getting paid more. Who thought bakers would be billionaires in the robot revolution, but they're going to launch the IP of the best cinnamon roll. It's just like, you can't even, like, the ideas for businesses and economies that this is unlocked. It just makes me, like, so fired up. Like,
you know what's my favorite one? Like, one of my favorite ones is, not that I would use this, but I'm just thinking about it, like, back in my day. Why wouldn't every club own a fleet of robo-taxis where they can offer free transportation to and from if you get bottle service?
Or it's just, like, me and my friends are buying enough drinks. Just come swoop us at my place and drive us 10 minutes to the club or bar.
And the bar foots the bill. Something like that. Because it's going to be so cheap. Because they're going to make extra.
Waiting in the cyber cab for you and your boys to get there. Like,
why not?
Dude. This is the new, like, roaring 20s that could be epic. Like, it could be like a really. Because that was actually the big thing. With the full Waymo ride, the vibe when you are in a full self-driving car is, it changes the game. When it's truly, it is a kickback in there and it is so fun. And I can't wait until that's, like, in every Tesla.
I mean, all these things that we're talking about, like, it's just problem solving capacity. These are problems and they're hard to solve for various reasons. But, you know, what is it that it takes to solve problems? Labor and intelligence. And that's what Tesla is talking about. Like, the Optimus robot plus AGI is labor and intelligence. And all of a sudden there's, like, these are two use cases, but we could talk about, you know, a bazillion different problems. And the thing is that the more problems we solve, the more it creates new novel problems. Like, there's all kinds of problems that we have today. And how do we, you know, make use of these LLMs that we have that, you know, that wasn't even a problem that existed 2 years ago. And now it exists.
Dude.
And so, like, we create more problems as we go along, and we create more problem solving capacity as we go along. And the value of all of that just kind of exponentially increases over time.
Bro, my wife makes a killer sourdough, like the best bread in the world, okay? Why shouldn't we just get a robotaxi?
Lies. I love Cindy, but these are lies. Brittany makes better sourdough bread.
We're going to have a wife off, bro. Let's go.
Wow.
So we live in a neighborhood where a lot of the people that live here do a lot of stuff like this. Like they do baking and whatever. Okay. So load up, one of the ideas here, load up the car with sourdough bread, put it in bins with the people's names and just have the car deliver them every single day. So you take out like hours of labor of driving around delivering and you just do it. And then all of a sudden neighborhoods become like homes become legitimate places where people can make a living because the transportation cost is so low. You know, it's crazy. It's nuts.
HOAs buying bots that perform neighborhood level services.
Love that.
Yeah. I think it's going to be up to us how we use it, how we use the technology.
So much creativity. It's crazy. All right, Gally, you want to send us off with some wise and words or some extreme vision of the future or just any parting words? I don't want to put too much pressure on you.
Well, I feel like the luckiest investor in the world because we've got Elon Musk, who I think is a once in a generation entrepreneur. And we just locked him up and incentivized him. I guess locked up is a bad way to put it. But like we are partnering with Elon for this new book. And I've spent my whole time investing in startups, studying companies. No one has come close to creating world-changing impact and companies and just making things that look like art, like Elon. And I think to have him with so many resources, a fleet of millions of cars, billions of dollars in the bank, the world's largest factory, his company, his shareholders backing him, him being only 50, 51, him going to be more motivated than ever, us aligning incentives, like we are gearing up for one of the most epic decades of capitalism ever. Just it's going to be a golden era of technology and everything that Tesla's working on now is going to look like a joke to the impact they're about to have. And we've seen them go 0 to 1. Now it's about 1 to N and bringing this sustainable technology to everything in the world economy. And we have, and like Elon, like we're partnering with Elon the next decade on this. And I just think this is the best show on Netflix. This is the best. It's just an exciting privilege to be a shareholder, to have Tesla be public, to be able to like be at this moment in history. And we're going to look back and be like, wait, Tesla relocated in Texas. And like, that's like, we're going to look back on this moment and it's going to be the start of this insane Westworld era of society that is profound implications for how humans live on Earth. And I don't know. So I just think it's worthwhile to take a moment to get out of the like, oh, Tesla FUD, this and that, and be like, we are part of a movement that is changing the world that nobody thought would succeed, that is bigger and more powerful than ever. And like, all you got to do is sit back and watch the show. So.
I love that. Built in Austin, Texas, baby. Let's go.
Let's go.
Austin, Texas. Let's go. Why are you moving here, Gally?
Thanks for having me on, Farzad. Appreciate it, bro. Always great.
Yeah, of course. You moving to Austin or what? What's going on? You moving here?
No, I'm a nomad, bro. I'm everywhere.
All right.
I'm good. In Austin.
Yeah, you stop by. Next time you're in town, let me know. Yeah, we'll sync up for sure. Where can people find you?
At G Filchi on X, Hyperchange on YouTube. Yeah.
Awesome. And add HyperGuap as well on X.
HyperGuap is my VC firm. If you're a startup investor raising capital, we're fun and amazing stuff. So.
And what about your awesome show? You got an awesome show.
Oh, 2VC Bros. If you want to see the world's worst sitcom about VC, 2VC Bros, written by and starring me and my business partner, Aiden. So definitely check that out.
It's actually really good. He's being modest. It's actually pretty funny. Like you guys do a really good job with that. It's super entertaining. Ooh, yeah.
Damn, okay.
It's awesome, man. Awesome. Nice. All right.